It's not an option. It's a right. Cocked, locked, and ready to rock the world of the anti-gunners. You are listening to the guy who had to register his mouth as a full auto weapon. Bill Carnes and 2A Radio. The fight for your rights isn't for pansies. So buckle up for the ride and knuckle down with Bill Carnes and 2A Radio.
Boom, shakalaka. This is Bill Carnes. I am your host for the Second Amendment Radio Show, 2A Radio. 2aradio.com is the website. Of course, all of the archives, information, everything is there. You can always go to 2aradio.com and check all of that out. Well, as it turns out, Tennessee is yet the latest state which is joined in other states looking to yank in the reins of federal control. And by one account, they say we have to smack their hand a little to get it out of the cookie jar. Now, here's the thing. If you read the Constitution of the United States, it says these are the powers invested to the federal government. We're creating the government with these documents. These are the powers you have. If the powers are not otherwise here, you don't have them. The states or the people do. Read the 10th Amendment. Any powers not specifically delegated to the United States government are reserved for the states or the people. Of course, federal government doesn't care about any of that. They have over many, many decades, over the last 150 years or more, have done nothing but gather and gather and gather more power. It really, the federal government worked pretty well for about a generation or two, maybe about 40 to 50 years. Then we had the Civil War. Forgot all about it. None of the founding fathers were around anymore. The Civil War was succession of the South because they didn't like the way that the federal government was going. So they exercised their rights to succession. Lincoln said, nope, no way. That was really the second American Revolution. When people today talk about the second American Revolution, if we have to have one to get the government back into control, it would actually be the third American Revolution. The second one didn't work out in our favor. This would be the third. With that being said, the federal government gets into the business of the states because in the Constitution it outlined the authority of the federal government to regulate interstate commerce, commerce between states. Not intrastate commerce, that's inside of its own state. Well, Senator Lacey Campfield of Tennessee is the one who said we have to smack their hand a little to get it out of the cookie jar. She told that to WND after confirming that she and State Representative Matthew Hill have launched Tennessee's version of a national nullification bill. Now, reported just a few days ago that Arizona and Montana were the first two states to introduce the proposals in this legislative session to set up a standing state commission to review, quote, all existing federal statutes, mandates, and executive orders to determine their constitutionality. The result would be recommendations to state lawmakers whether any particular federal plan should be nullified in the state. Previously, introduced in Montana and Arizona, the legislation now is pending in Tennessee as House Bill 1705 and Senate Bill 1474. There, it would direct, quote, the General Assembly to appoint a committee to review all federal laws and regulations for constitutionality and require the committee to submit for a vote of the General Assembly all federal laws and regulations it deemed to be invalid under the Tennessee or federal constitutions. The plan has been prompted by the Patriot Union, a Wyoming-based organization that is taking in hand the battle against what it considers an overreaching federal government. Campfield said that It's not that the federal government has gone a little too far. It's gone way too far in what their responsibilities are. He said probably half of what the federal government is trying to stick their noses into. Interesting. Well, WND previously has reported that a large number of states are taking to the battlefield against Washington, D.C. over specific issues state lawmakers and governments believe they should decide rather than taking direction from those scumbags in D.C. The key, however, analysts have said, is what will happen in the first actual confrontation when it comes between the federal government and the state exercising its constitutional right. Campfield said, quote, "I would like to think that the state would prevail. It comes down to who has the final say." He said he's talking with a number of Tennessee sheriffs who say they are ready, willing, and able to take on that argument. Campfield said he's optimistic about the idea that it will catch fire in his state, which now has a GOP majority in the House and Senate and a Republican governor in the office. "I would like to think there's enough spine this year," noting that those Democrat-held states have no spine. Attorney Stephen Pidgeon, wonderful name, a spokesman for the Patriots Union, said states are starting to assert their rights under the Constitution. He says the idea is as old as the administration of Jimmy Carter. What a joke of an administration that was, because at that time, it was called the Sagebrush Rebellion, when Western states fought back against Washington's control of land inside their borders, especially oil-rich and coal-filled land resources. Why did Washington do that? Because the president previously elected was Nixon. Ford was president between them, but he wasn't elected to the job. Previous elected President Nixon completely did away with any lasting little sentiment of the gold standard. If you don't have gold as a mineral, what would you then use to support your finances in the country? Well, oil is good, coal is good, any mineral. Gold is a mineral. You should have stayed on it, you jackasses. Quote, "There is no constitutional right for the federal government to hold natural resources, federal or federal parks," he said. "For states such as Utah, which has been fighting with the federal government to regain ownership of its land, the nullification plan offers a strong argument to chase the government off its property. The issue is being forced into the headlines by Barack Obama's decision that effectively would nationalize the decision-making process for health care across the U.S. under Obamacare. But the states have ratified the issue of currency, the Real ID Act, marijuana laws, guns, health care regulations, and others. They have raised those issues." We're going to continue on with this when we get back, because this is a little bit bigger of a story. Again, with the federal government trying to take over everything even within the states. And the states, mind you, are set up to be their own little independent nations that all get along with a little bit of the federal government just kind of as the mediator. Stay tuned. I'm your host, Bill Carnes. You're right here, tuned in with 2A Radio.
Tell everyone in the room to pipe down. 2A Radio with Bill Carnes is back.
Welcome back from the break, everyone. We're continuing on with this story about where the state of Tennessee is joining in with some other states to really kind of slap the hand of the federal government and get them out of state business. States have raised the issue of things such as currency, the Real ID Act, marijuana laws, guns, healthcare regulation, and others. Here's a quote. "Under the Constitution, states are required to use coinage of gold and silver. But the federal government has inflicted on the states the fraud of a debased fiat currency. This is the best mechanism that has been developed to date to push the beast back in the cage," he says. This is by Mr. Pigeon, the guy from the big pro everything state, Wisconsin. I forget the name of the organization. It's too far back in my notes. Here we go. We'll just use that meteoric, deplorable, disgusting idea of a explanation I just used. Let's see. Whereas Washington also used to be able to demand its way by making delivery of federal funds to state dependents on their cooperation, he said, that's now an empty hope. Quote, the federal government is bankrupt, he says, making it for states a matter of survival. This is no longer a policy issue. It's not, shall we have salt or pepper? The question is, shall we eat or not? Officials with the Patriots Union says that dozens of states are working on the idea of a nullification plan. Major components of their proposals are, first, establish the constitutional grounds for state nullification. Establish a swift method for nullification of any unconstitutional federal act, past, present, or future. Establish that the U.S. Supreme Court only has original jurisdiction under Title III of the U.S. Constitution. That's important. Before we move on, I'm going to sidebar on this for a moment. When the state of Arizona and their SB 1070, which was their No Illegal Immigrants in the State Act, it was fought at a federal court level. And that federal judge said, okay, these certain provisions of SB 1070, you cannot, I'm enjoining you from enforcing. That federal judge was not the U.S. Supreme Court. Under Article 3 of the U.S. Constitution, only the Supreme Court of the United States has authority to adjudicate decisions between the federal government and the states. Continuing on, also to establish that the people, not the courts, have the final word on constitutionality. Establish the very limited role and power of the federal government under the Ninth and Tenth Amendments. Reject modern expansions of power via misinterpretations of the Commerce, Welfare, and Supremacy Clauses. Regain state and citizen control over the runaway Fed, meaning the Federal Reserve. The legislative proposal is a huge leap beyond what already has developed among the states, who officials are telling Washington to back off on individual issues ranging from state marijuana laws, National Guard controls, and the imposition of Obamacare and national health care program. Just so you know, the National Guard, they call it the National Guard. The person who's in charge of the National Guard in each state is the governor. Now, many of you may already know this. Some of you may not. The President of the United States has the authority to call up the military and send it off to fight any immediate sort of police action or war that the president sees fit. But within, and I believe this number is 45 days, he must have information before Congress so that they can approve the elongated stay of military troops. There is, however, a bit of an exception to that. The United States Marine Corps answers only to the president. Therefore, the president doesn't need to have any additional authority other than, all right, I'm sending the Marines in to do this. He doesn't need congressional approval to do that or to keep them there. The United States Marine Corps is the president's personal fighting force. When it comes to a state-related force, the governors have the National Guard. Continuing on, Barbara Kate, head of the organization's Constitutional Justice Division, was integral in researching and drafting the proposal, which was distributed to members of state legislatures, where it now either has been introduced or is being developed. She told WND her proposed legislation has options for states to describe the size and composition or even designation of their commissions. But the focus is the rights of the states, which, according to the U.S. Constitution, include everything not specifically assigned to the federal government, as we discussed earlier in the last segment. It's not anything new, she tells WND. We just reiterated the power the states have always had. She said over the past 70 to 80 years, the federal government has been encroaching on the rights and responsibilities of the states. I fear to say at least twice that long. Bills such as those to nullify Obamacare or federal firearms rules are all fine, she noted, but this is a broad sweeping bill that will cover almost any dispute that a state will have with the federal government, she says. Now, in my state of Nevada, it's a relatively conservative state, but it's a mixed state. It really is mixed. We have one senator who's a Democrat, one is a Republican. We've got three representatives in the House. One's Democrat, two are Republicans. In the at the state level, we have a Republican governor. The last governor was Republican. The governor before that was Republican. Before that, they were all Democrats. The state House and the state Senate are all Democrat controlled. And that's just due to gerrymandering. Every 10 years, when we get the census, they gerrymander the living hell out of it. Another thing's interesting. There are 13 counties in the state of Nevada. They're all very large. Kansas has like 110. There are 13 counties. But there are 17 senators. Wouldn't it work out properly that there should be 13 senators, one from every county? Each state has two senators at the federal level. Each county should have one senator at the state level. But no, there's extra senators in Clark County, which is the largest one. There might even be a single extra senator out of Washoe County, which has Reno. I'm not exactly sure. I haven't looked up the latest gerrymandering system. When it comes to the state House members, the state assembly, some of them represent 15,000 people. Others represent 264,000 people. Just because that's where they can lock into where there's a majority of Democrats in those areas. The Republicans tend to hold huge areas. The Democrats oftentimes control very small little areas, but they all have the same number of votes. So until Nevada can somehow find a way to pass an anti-gerrymandering law, and every representative is plus or minus 0.25% of the populace when the lines are redrawn every 10 years, we will never see anything like this go through our state. It'll just get locked up in every Democrat-controlled committee. Go for it, Tennessee. I might just have to move someday. Stay tuned, folks. There's plenty more to come after the break. I'm your host, Bill Carnes. You're tuned in live right here to 2A Radio.
You're listening to a guy who packs a gun to shoot the bad guys and packs a mic to shoot his mouth off. Bill Carnes and 2A Radio are back.
Welcome back, everyone. We're now going to talk about H.R. 822, which is in the House of Representatives in D.C. What is H.R. 822? Well, it's the National Right to Carry Reciprocity Bill. Introduced in the House of Representatives by Cliff Stearns, Republican out of Florida, and Heath Shuler, Democrat out of North Carolina. Now, it's always good when a bill is introduced by two members of opposing parties, because then they believe, oh, it's got a bipartisan support. It would allow any person with a valid state-issued concealed firearms permit to carry a concealed firearm in any state that issues concealed firearms permit or that does not prohibit the carrying of concealed firearms for lawful purposes. Now, that's just like a driver's license. I have a driver's license issued by the state of Nevada. I can drive in any of the other 50 states because they all issue driver's licenses. They might have slightly different laws for rules of the road. Like in the rural areas of Nevada, you need to signal for 300 feet before you make a turn. In Wyoming, it might be 250 feet. There's similar laws. You can still drive. They recognize those states. You get married in one state through a state-approved marriage certificate and state-approved marital performing ceremony guy. They recognize them in the states. You get to be a certified welder. You can pretty much be a certified. You get the idea. Now, a state's laws governing where concealed firearms may be carried will apply within its borders. The bill applies to District of Columbia, Puerto Rico, and all other U.S. territories. It would not create a federal licensing system. Rather, it would require the states to recognize each other's carry permits, just as they recognize driver's licenses and carry permits held by armored car guards. Representative Stearns has introduced such legislation every year since 1995. H.R. 822 recognizes the significant impact of the landmark case in D.C. versus Heller of 2008 and McDonald versus City of Chicago 2010, which found that the Second Amendment protects a fundamental, which also means foundational, fundamental individual right to keep and bear arms, and that the protections of the Second Amendment extend to infringement under state law. Today, 48 states have laws permitting concealed carry in some circumstances. 40 states, accounting for two-thirds of the U.S. population, have right-to-carry laws. 36 of those have shall-issue permits, including Alaska and Arizona, which also allow carrying without a permit. Two have fairly administered discriminatory issue permits, and Vermont, along with Alaska and Arizona, also allows carrying without a permit. Eight states have restrictive discretionary issue laws. Citizens with carry permits are more law-abiding than the general public. Only 0.1%, or 0.01%, of nearly 1.2 million permits issued by Florida have been revoked because of firearms crimes committed by the holders. That's 1 in 1,000. Similarly, low percentages of permits have been revoked in Texas, Virginia, and numerous other right-to-carry states that keep such statistics. Right-to-carry is widely supported by police officials and policing groups. States with right-to-carry laws have lower violent crime rates. On average, right-to-carry states have 22% lower total violent crime rates, 30% lower murder rates, 46% lower robbery rates, and 12% lower aggravated assault rates compared to the rest of the country. The seven states with the lowest violent crime rates are all right-to-carry states. And that's FBI Justice Department data statistics right there. Crime declines in states with right-to-carry laws. Since adopting right-to-carry in 1987, Florida, for instance, their total violent crime and murder rates have dropped 32% and 58%, respectively. Texas violent crime rate and murder rates have dropped 20% and 31%, respectively, since enactment of its 1996 law for right-to-carry. Again, more data by the FBI and Justice Department. The right of self-defense is fundamental. It's been recognized in laws for centuries. Not just here in the States, but overseas. The Declaration of Independence asserts that life is among the unalienable rights of all people. The Second Amendment guarantees the right of the people to keep and bear arms, and that's for security. That's not shooting sports and hunting. The laws of all states and the constitutions of most states recognize the right to use force in self-defense. The Supreme Court has stated that a person, quote, may repel force by force, end quote, in self-defense and is, quote, entitled to stand his ground and meet any attack made upon him with a deadly weapon, in such a way, and with such force, as needed to prevent great bodily injury or death. That was Beard versus United States of 1895. Long-standing law. Congress affirmed the right to own guns for protective purposes in the Gun Control Act of 1968 and the Firearms Owners Protection Act of 1986. In 1982, the Senate Judiciary Committee, the Subcommittee on the Constitution, described the right to arms as, quote, a right of the individual citizen to privately possess and carry in a peaceful manner firearms and similar arms. This was a Democrat-controlled Senate Judiciary Subcommittee. Okay? So, all of this works out to H.R. 822. Get a hold of your representatives in the House and the Senate and let them know to support H.R. 22 in the House and similar legislation in the Senate. When you get a license to drive a car, you can drive it in any state. They don't argue with you. Oh, you know what? We don't recognize Florida driver's licenses here in Nevada. We don't recognize Utah driver's licenses here in Nevada. But they say that about the concealed weapons permits. We don't recognize Utah permits in Nevada. We don't recognize Florida permits in Nevada. They used to recognize both. Now they recognize neither. Why? Well, the Nevada Association of Police Chiefs and Sheriffs actually govern a lot of the specifics dealing with the permitting issues in Nevada, including now the reciprocity, which has only been on the books for the last 2 years. With that, what they say is the other states have to have similar CCW, concealed weapons, training and laws to Nevada. Okay. Well, Nevada has a permit for 5 years. Florida's is for 7 years. Well, that's no good. So we're going to not recognize Florida anymore. Nevada has a shooting test. You actually have to shoot. They call it a test. It's a joke. Anybody who can't pass it shouldn't be packing anyhow. Utah does not require a shooting test. So they don't recognize that. Well, if H.R. 822 passes, everybody will have to recognize everyone else, and I'm for it. Stay tuned, guys. More to come. We'll be right back.
If you live in a state which allows Class 3 NFA firearms and accessories, and you either have an interest in or already own Class 3 NFA items, the process for an individual to own these items includes photographs, fingerprints, obtaining a letter of permission from your police chief or sheriff, and a full personal background check which is spread across the whole federal system. Until now. Forming an NFA trust eliminates the requirements of letters of permission and all personal data and background checks in purchasing and possessing NFA firearms and accessories. NFA trusts offer a level of anonymity as well as flexibility in the purchasing, possessing, and storage of your Class 3 NFA firearms and accessories. To learn more about forming a secure and flexible NFA trust at a fraction of the cost from attorneys, visit www.billcarnes.com and click on the NFA tab. That's BILLCARNS.com and click on the NFA tab.
As long as politicians attack our rights, Bill will be fighting for them. Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes is back.
Back on!
Well, welcome back from the break, everyone. Now, we have the right to life, liberty, pursuit of happiness. Not that we're all going to be happy, but pursuit of happiness. That means managing yourself, managing your family, the way you see fit, as long as it doesn't bring harm to other people. Not that the state, and by the state I mean any sort of authorities, could come in and start managing, micromanaging how you do things. That's when things are awry. That's what we've got today. Now, one of the strongest constitutional sheriffs in the entire country is Sheriff Joe Arpaio, commonly referred to as America's Sheriff. He's the sheriff of Maricopa County, Arizona. Phoenix is incorporated by Maricopa County. He's a guy that has the tent cities. Everybody wears pink. They have to pay for their own food. He took away all their television once. It was fought in a court case. The Supreme Court actually got involved and said you have to allow cable TV for the inmates. So this is okay, fine. So he allows two channels, the Weather Channel and the Disney Channel. That's the cable TV they get. So this is the guy we're talking about. Well, deputies are seeking protection after threatening a family and are claiming immunity for telling parents that their children would be confiscated by the cops, confiscated by the state. Well, there are several Maricopa County, Arizona deputies, Joe Arpaio's boys, who are seeking protection from the courts after threatening to take children away from their parents because of what? The homeschooling the family was giving to their kids. The family was unwilling to allow social workers inside the homes for an inspection based on an unsubstantiated anonymous rumor. Okay, let's get into this. Local officials with the Homeschool Legal Defense Association have responded to the court filing by the deputies, explaining that they must answer for their actions in a court of law. The case stems from a conflict in 2006, 5 years ago, when social services in Arizona and John and Tiffany Loudermilk had a confrontation. A judge previously ruled that their lawsuit over civil rights violations by the social workers and the deputies can move forward. But the deputies appealed to the 9th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals that they should be exempted from liability. Really, yeah, get a badge, do whatever you want, everything's cool, right? No. Social workers told earlier by the court that they must respect the U.S. Constitution regarding privacy and parental rights, did not appeal the ruling. And the case, pending in the 9th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals, will move forward at the district court level once again, once the deputy's requests have been resolved. As far as the court has suggested, the social workers, accompanied by Maricopa County Sheriff's deputies, made unsupported threats to place a family's children in custody and arrest the parents if they were not allowed to make what ended up being an allegedly illegal search of the family's home. Here's a quote. No intellectually serious argument can be made to support the deputy's incredulity, whatever, about an innocent man who would wish to keep a government official from intruding into his home without legal authority. That is in the brief that they put together in opposition to the deputy's request. Quote, the deputies were not merely bystanders. They were active participants in coercing consent to search. It was clearly established law that the threatening presence of several officers is an important factor in determining whether consent to search is voluntary and whether a person is seized. There's many longstanding court cases on that. Quote, they cannot claim that they were merely present or merely standing by. Indeed, the physical presence of a single uniformed law enforcement officer is considered to be use of force, according to the brief. After Sergeant Joseph Sousa arrived on the scene, he determined that there were no grounds for arrest and that there was no justification to enter the Loudermilk's home without a search warrant. The written policy of the Maricopa County Sheriff's Office about consent searches further put Sergeant Sousa and the rest of MCSO defendants on notice that, quote, any consent to search must be voluntary without fear, threats, or promise. Continuing, says Sergeant Sousa was the patrol sergeant. He had the authority to order the deputies to leave the Loudermilk's home, but he did not do so. Each of the deputies individually, and all of whom together, were active participants in the violation of the Loudermilk's constitutional rights, the brief argues. Their conduct was contrary to clearly established law. It was contrary to their training, and it was contrary to the sheriff's written policy about consent searches. Deputies argued that the district court erred in denying their motion for summary judgment and that they should be granted qualified immunity. Of course, this is wrong. The law from the Fourth Amendment in relation to warrantless searches and child protective investigations is clearly established and has been since at least 1999. There was a clear violation of the Loudermilk's constitutional rights to be protected from unreasonable search and seizures. Earlier, the U.S. District Court Judge Earl H. Carroll decided that the lawsuit by the family against the social workers, the sheriff, and the deputies would be allowed to continue because the social workers' concerns were based on, quote, an anonymous tip that the Loudermilk children were being neglected and that the plaintiff's home was uninhabitable. However, the judge said that under the federal law, an anonymous tip without more does not constitute probable cause. You're right. It only constitutes reasonable suspicion. And even if it were probable cause, they would still have to have exigent circumstances to force a warrantless search. Obviously not there. The Loudermilks are members of the Homeschool Legal Defense Association, which is a Virginia-based organization, which is leading their defense. Here's a quote. Social workers and sheriff's deputies have come to visit their home, demanding entry based on a six-week-old anonymous tip that the newly constructed home was unsafe for children. Brand new constructed home. The judge's ruling had directed the case towards a jury trial, except the process was interrupted by the deputy's demand for protection from the courts against accusations of civil rights violations. Look, buddy, you violate my rights, you're going to have to deal with me. If a cop violates my rights, and I wouldn't accuse them of civil rights violations, I'm not a 14th Amendment citizen, I'm an original class citizen. It would be unalienable rights violation, and it would probably be brand new territory for any attorney in any court to actually hear those sorts of violations. Violations of my unalienable rights, not my civil rights. Those can be adjudicated by a judge. Unalienable rights, those are laid down by the hand of God, and I have them. If a cop or any other, where anybody violate, anybody who's an employee of the government on the clock that violates my rights, you will have to deal with me personally. Because my rights violations happened by you personally. It'd be one of these, we'll settle this out in the parking lot sort of affairs, if you will. Now, authorities have alleged that the Loudermilks voluntarily allowed the search of their home, which produced no evidence to the rumor. In fact, the rumor was not true. The, HSLDA, Homeschool Legal Defense Association, said, however, that the, quote, assertion ignores the fact the social workers had said the Loudermilk children would be removed for 72 hours if the parents did not permit entry. Violation. Fourth Amendment illegal search and seizure. Either you bow to us or we're going to seize your children for 72 hours and search your home. One way or another, we're searching. That's what they're telling them. According to the HSLDA, social workers responded to the six-week-old tip, demanded entry into the home, and guess what? The sheriff deputies on scene escalated the whole confrontation, the front door, for 40 minutes. No fewer than four deputies. And they threatened to take the kids. This is the state. That is tyranny. Yet another reason to have guns and ammo, know how to use them for things like that. an individual case of the government overstepping its bounds.
I'd like to close by saying, to those of you within our government, we will be watching you, Congress, the executive, and judicial branches all very closely as we organize to save our freedom, liberty, and country. We will not become the subjects of governmental rule.
Thanks for tuning in. Bill will be back tomorrow. Now go side in and shoot straight. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes. Learn more about Bill at BillCarnes.com. Send your comments to Bill at 2aradio.com.